audience members. This week's theme is about the holidays. And I had a story that I wanted to tell. It's just kind of a short anecdote about that I think fits the theme pretty perfectly. It was either last year or the year before. I think I've told you guys before that I am a horrible procrastinator, and this does not cease for holiday shopping. So it was Christmas Eve, and I really wanted to get my dad one of those little cute straw hats that they have at Ward's, because he's got this garden, and I thought it would be perfect. So I was there on Christmas Eve, and it was totally frantic. Everyone was in the worst mood because they had also procrastinated until the day before Christmas to get their Christmas hams and turkeys, and there was this horrible, horrible tension in the air. And I was waiting in line, I remember pretty distinctly, and everyone was just in their own little frustrated world. And all of a sudden, out of the back, this line of people who worked at Ward's came, and they had hats, like Santa hats on, and they had brooms, and they had things that they were banging, and they started in this line, and you know how small the aisles are at Ward's, so this was a pretty difficult feat for them, but they started weaving around the store singing Christmas carols. And immediately, the atmosphere changed. It was incredible. Everyone just kind of sighed this, I don't know, sigh of relief, and started singing along with all of the people squeezing their way through the aisles singing Christmas carols. It was incredible. It was incredible just how quickly that made the mood change. So this week's theme is, I'm suddenly blanking on the theme.
Holidays.
Oh, holiday affective disorder. Thank you, Bill. The ecstasy and the agony. So if you have a story about ecstasy or agony of the holidays, please tell us your story. We'll have a list up here at this front table. Put your name on it, and we'll call you up in order. But to get us started, is there anyone who has a story that they'd like to tell?
What about the
no one? This hasn't happened before.
No,
you'll
tell that story.
I bet it's a good story. All right, first up is Denise, and we'll be right up here to take your names. Also, we'd really like this to be a friendly storytelling event, and we understand that people come to Lightning Salvage for other things besides storytelling, but there's tons of seating around the outside, so if you're here to talk, we would kindly request that you maybe sit at one of the other tables so that you don't distract people, because I know I get really nervous telling my short story about Ward's, so I imagine that all of you might as well. So, without further ado,
okay. Well, this is a holiday story, part of the holidays. Oh, I'm Don. I'm sorry, this is my friend Grace. And if she sticks with me, we'll tell this everybody on the holidays. You often go on holiday road trips to go visit relatives in a minivan or station wagon packed with kids. So this story is mostly about how do I get along with your kids and your wife in a minivan on an 18-hour holiday road trip. But it's not a long story, it's a very short little one. But see, my wife and I, we had four kids, and they were all on the trip, and we had to go from North Carolina to Florida and back, long trip. So on the way home, the 9.5-hour trip, patience starts to wear thin, kids are going crazy in the back. Of course, everybody who's married knows how the driving assignments get assigned. Usually it's your spouse who gets to drive when the kids are asleep or they're happy or well fed. When the kids get cranky, that's when, well, I'm sorry, I got that around. I get to drive when they're happy, she gets to drive when they're cranky and you have to get in the back. So we're on the way home to North Carolina, 8 hours in a 9.5-hour trip, and she says, I've got to drive, get in the back with the cranky kids. But fortunately, that what saved the holiday road trip, the cooler of beer was still in the back of the minivan with the kids, left over. So She was just as happy for me to get in the back with the kids, finish off the cooler of beer, and somehow the kids were happy as long as I was down the beer once every 15 miles. That's the whole story. Happy holidays.
Thanks so much. I imagine you're not the only one with a holiday traveling story. So if that got any ideas sparked for anyone, please just raise your hand. Anyone? Do you have a story? No? Are you? Alright, come on up. Introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is maybe 9 years old. I went to church on Christmas Eve with my whole family. It's a beautiful service. It's candlelit. The lights go down. Everyone lights each other's candles. It's a real nice time of like fellowship and feeling nice about each other. At the time, my sister and I, that charming little redhead right there, our favorite movie was Home Alone. If you guys aren't familiar with the plot, it's this little boy, he's 8 years old, he's kind of like a ne'er-do-well, he always gets in trouble with his family. His whole family goes on vacation at Christmas time without him, leaving him home alone. And he has a great time at first. He orders pizza, a whole pizza just for himself. He watches violent movies about gangsters. And it was our favorite because we had always wanted to run around a giant mansion and cause chaos. So at Christmas time, at our Christmas service, as the lights are going up, well, hold on, let me back up a second. There's a line in the movie from another movie. So the little boy Kevin is watching this movie in his kitchen, and it's an old gangster movie, it's in black and white, and there's a line where the gangster, he bows down somebody with his AK-47, I don't know, something, some sort of awful weapon. And he says, "Merry Christmas, you filthy animal," but he says it with this really rough gangster voice. And so, flash forward to the Christmas Eve service. My sister and I, we're so young, she's 3 years younger than me, so she must have been like 6 or 7. And the lights are coming up, and it's the cue for everyone in the church to sort of turn around and greet everybody, say Merry Christmas, you know, Happy New Year. The lights come up. My sister turns around to the guy sitting behind us, who is this frail, kind of shaky old man, and she says, "Merry Christmas, you filthy animal." And then she tacks on, "And Happy New Year." That's my story.
Thanks so much for your story. We still don't have anyone on the list yet, so we're still just taking volunteers. So, who's next? All right. Thanks so much. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, I'm Tori. I am that cute redhead sister. And that's the past stories about me, but now I'm going to tell you the story. It's kind of a holiday. It's about Thanksgiving. So about a couple Thanksgivings ago, my mom, because my parents are divorced, my mom had this big Thanksgiving dinner. And my sister has a really good friend who she's known since she was in 8th grade. And her family came to our Thanksgiving dinner. So we had this big meal with like 3 turkeys, and we deep fried them. And it was great, and it was delicious. And we were sitting there for a couple of hours just like talking and having a great time with all the turkey. And so my sister's best friend's mother is a great baker. So she makes cheesecakes, she makes pies, and so she made 3 cheesecakes and 3 pies. And so my mom, by the time, because we started eating around probably like 3, so around like 9 o'clock, my mom had been having a lot to drink. So we get to the cheesecakes, and my mom, like, I still can't believe to this day that this happened. So my mom, like, slowly, like, dramatically, like, takes a bite, and she's like, oh, this cheesecake! And she's, like, so excited about this cheesecake. And my sister and I are, like, looking at each other, like, what is going on? And she's like, Carol, this cheesecake is just so good. And we're just like, Mom, what are you doing? So that happened, and now every single Thanksgiving we make fun of my mom and be like, oh, this cheesecake. And we don't actually have cheesecake.
Thanks for sharing your story with us. I've seen a couple of new people in the back there, so just as a reminder, this is the Conk Live Storytelling 5 minutes or less of no notes by audience members. And this month's theme is Holiday Affective Disorder, the Ecstasy and the Agony. We'd also like to thank Lightning Salvage, Saftel's Pizza, and Grow Radio for kind of bringing this event together. And hopefully at this time, someone has thought of a perfect holiday story. Oh, Jordan's got one. Come on up, Jordan.
All right. That's loud. There we go. So I sort of have a couple little tiny stories about the holidays that happen around my house. And I'm very absent-minded. I forget things really easy, especially names, sometimes days of the week, things like that. And one of the memorable for the rest of my family, they just thought it was the most bizarre thing ever. But it's pretty much par for the course for me, is I forgot that it was Christmas Eve. I live in Gainesville, and my family all lives just south of Tampa, in a town called Bradenton. And I drove the 2.5-hour drive down to see my family on Christmas Eve, for Christmas Eve. And I get to my house, my parents live where they had a little house, a little like a rental studio place on the beach. And I stopped in there, and I made myself a sandwich. I'm like, I'm gonna watch some TV. And you know, it's getting on like 9 o'clock at night. And finally the phone rings and I answer it. And I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? And it's my mom. She said, well, where are you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, well, it's Christmas Eve. You're supposed to be at your grandfather's house. And I was hanging out at my house. I don't know to this day, I don't know what happened, how that worked out or anything like that. So that was kind of interesting. Another one that was a little bit mixed. There was some ecstasy and agony. I proposed to my wife just before Christmas, maybe a month before, and it was not something that I ever thought that I was going to do, is get married. And it wasn't that I was against the idea, but as a young man growing up, and even a young boy, like you don't think, or at least I didn't think about like, you know, getting a job and doing things and stuff like that. Like I was gonna be an astronaut or maybe an archaeologist, like Indiana Jones, and you know, the life was going to be adventure. And then I saw Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, if anybody's seen that. And then I was going to go to Las Vegas, and that was going to be the end of my life. Like, you know, not the end, but like, it would just sort of fade out into a pleasant white buzz. It would just be a wonderful time. There was nothing, you know, there was no really thought of like, okay, in 5 years, I'm going to have something in place or a plan. So the idea of getting married just kind of, you know, it just settled upon me. And, I knew it was a really good idea. It's been 7 years, and it's still a really good idea. So that's, I like that. But getting back to the point of this is that I got engaged, and this is not, again, not the kind of thing that my parents or family at all would, like, expect me to do. I'm very much, my sister and I are both, like, the weirdos in the family. Everybody else likes football, and they like to, you know, sort of they mow their lawns and things like that. You know, and they're proud of it. They're like, this is my lawn. It's green. So, my lawn is just trees. Anyway, so getting engaged, going to see my family, and some of my family has yet to meet my wife, and she's 15 years older than me, so it's a little weird, too. She's, you know, I mean, it's not weird for me, but it is, again, for people who, like, they like to keep green lawns and, you know, have a station wagon and kind of, you know, it can be something that not everybody's on the same page with. So, you know, we go there. My parents know my wife, or my fiance at the time, and they're you know, they don't know that we're getting engaged, but they like her. They think she's a sweet lady, and she is. And so we get to the house, and now I'm going to go off onto another tangent. We're at the house. It's it's Christmas Eve. I've remembered it's Christmas Eve, which is good. We're there. My parents are not there yet. They're at church, and we're waiting for them to come home from church. And we get this phone call. And this is where the tangent goes off. Simultaneously to all this happening is my grandfather has gotten old enough and senile enough. He likes to drink a lot. Like a lot, like he puts, you know, vodka in his coffee, and you know, he's got some issues. But he's a sweet gentleman, he's a sweet man, and he was put into a home maybe like the beginning of summer that year. And his health is failing, and you know, things are going downhill, and well, the phone rings on Christmas Eve, and I answer it, and it's the hospital. And they're like, is Rhonda Borstman there? That's my mom's name. And I'm like, no, she's out at church. It's Christmas Eve. Like, duh. And they're like, well, this is so, such and such a hospital. And I was like, oh, I, you know, I knew what that meant. And I was like, well, can you tell me? And they're like, no. And I was like, oh, I know what that means. So, you know, my grandfather had passed away. And family came home. And this is very difficult. Like, I'm getting married. Your dad's dead. I mean, I didn't present it that way at all, by any means. But I didn't know how. I was like, oh, this is crazy. You know, this is. And it worked out really nicely. Like, everybody knew that he was failing, and so it was just, it was sad. And then we were like, but we're getting married. And then everybody jumped around and laughed, and, you know, we had a really good time. So that was a nice, that was a good story there. And then the last one, and I, am I running out of time? I don't even know, but. The last one is a little tradition that my mother would have. And you know, a lot of you might leave cookies out for Santa Claus, right? And maybe some milk, or I don't know, we would also leave some carrots for the reindeer that would land on the roof. We'd simply leave some carrots. And the Easter Bunny did this too. We would leave carrots for him too, because, you know, bunnies like carrots as well. But both the Easter Bunny and the reindeer would leave evidence that they were there. Not only was there like munches taken out of the carrots and scattered about, but there were little tiny poops. And sometimes they would be like in a trail, you know, like the bunny hopped off, the reindeers, you know, they went to the next door neighbors, this little trail of poops. My sister and I were fascinated. We were like, whoa! You know, like, it's, they pooped here. They were really, it meant they were really here, you know? Because my parents wouldn't, they wouldn't eat a carrot and then, you know, like, take a poop. And you know, it doesn't look like that. They looked like little raisins. And as we got older, we started to go. My sister's 4 years older than me, so she's a little behind the time here, because I was like, they kind of look like raisins. Are they raisins? And so we, you know, we argued about it. We asked my mom. She was not going to say anything about it. She was not going to tell us. It's reindeer poop. And so finally, my sister and I, we got a little spatula and a little brush. And we brushed up one of the samples, and we put it on a cutting board. And with a fork and a knife, we cut it in half. And it was entirely inconclusive as to whether it was a raisin or a piece of poop, because cut open a raisin next time, you know what I mean? It's just some little brown stuff with some little flecks, and we never got farther than that. That was the end of it. It was probably poop as far as I was concerned. So there we are, ladies. So.
My list is still empty. This makes this very awkward for me. Who wants to help me out? All right, that wasn't as, oh, hooray. All right, just introduce yourself.
Okay. All right, I'm Austin. And so this story is more about like how unappreciative my brother and I were when we were younger. So my brother is about a year and a half younger than I am. And so we were always not very well off financially growing up, so my parents always had to kind of scrounge to get us Christmas presents and all that. And one year, my parents had gotten my brother Pyramidus, which was the Power Rangers, like, pyramid toy thing, and it was apparently pretty expensive and like kind of difficult to obtain because it was a really hot toy, I guess. I don't know if any of you guys remember Power Rangers, but so my brother's opening it, and like it's the last, because we only had one big gift each. We had, like, so we get like one electronic toy and then one big toy and then like a book or something like that. And so this was his one big toy, and he opened it, and it was like everyone, like, we're all really quiet. And my parents were like really excited to see his reaction because they thought he would love it. And so he's opening it, he looks at it, and he just like stares down at it, and he just looks up and he's like, "This isn't what I ordered from Santa." And they just like devastated my parents. And then the same year, we opened up our electronics presents, and my brother got the Game Boy Yellow, like with the Pokemon Yellow, and so it had like, it was shaped like a Pikachu or something like that. And I saw him open it, and so my brother was already like really considerate with the Paramita thing, and when I saw him open that, I started bawling, because I really wanted the Pikachu Game Boy, and if he had it, I obviously couldn't have it too. And so I guess this is like the agony part of Christmas, at least for my parents. But the good news is, in retrospect, it's kind of, I feel like, hopefully, made my brother and myself more appreciative, and hopefully we act better now when we get presents.
Thank you, Austin. All right, here comes Dave.
Before I get started, I just want to say, this pizza is so good. So, hey, how are you doing, Patrick? Are you going to tell a story? Okay. No, I don't believe that. So you get a lot of presents from your parents, but the big present you get is the core of your being, whether you asked for that or not, from your parents. That's the big present you get. I hope I don't give anybody nightmares tonight who hasn't come to this conclusion independently, but sooner or later you will in fact turn into either your mother or your father, or in my case, you will turn intermittently into both. I got from my father, the big present that I got in life from my father, were his bad back, his incredible klutziness, sometimes almost willful klutziness, and his crappy personality. So that's what I got from my dad. I remember when I was a kid, we went to a ski area on Christmas, because of course that's what normal people do when they go skiing on Christmas. That's what you do on Christmas, is you go skiing. I mean, of course, that's what normal people do. And we were supposed to get new skis for me. I was about Grace's size, and I was supposed to get new skis because my skis were cracked. So my father, because he planned this all ahead, decided that the thing to do would be to buy the new skis at the ski slope, where they cost about 3 times as much money and where it's already cutting into his day of skiing, so he's already in a really bad mood. And he wanted to move the bindings over from my old skis, because the bindings, the things that hold your feet to the skis, are pretty expensive, you know, separate item. And the guy at this sort of walk-up outdoor ski shop at the ski slope would not do it. He said, "No, that's a liability issue. It's not safe. We're not going to do that." And my father said, "That's a racket. You guys are just trying to fleece people from another $100 for the bindings." And the guy started getting mad about being called a liar, and my dad started getting mad about being liberated of another $100. And it got a little bit more heated, a little bit more heated. Merry Christmas, fa la 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 la. And at some point, my dad decided that the way to handle this was to drive away to a ski shop that was not at the ski area. So he turns to leave in a huff, not remembering that he had ski boots on. Whereupon his feet went out from under him, he landed on his tailbone, wrenched his back, and we spent the next 4 days in the condo with him flat on his back on the couch saying, "Don't touch me, don't touch me, don't touch me." Now that's a story that you think about the first time, perhaps, when you are yourself about 38 and you decide that normal people go to Eastern Europe for Christmas by themselves. And so you're traveling in Eastern Europe, you've been to a lot of places, but here it is literally Christmas Day, and you're in Moscow. And you've just arrived on the overnight train from St. Petersburg. Merry Christmas to all. And what you really want to do, if you're me in that situation, is send a quick email from the internet cafe that's upstairs in the Moscow train station. Except that the rates that are published there are for people to compose their email on the machines that are there at the train station. Now, I don't want to do that. I have a flash drive. I've got the email on. I'm not going to be billed 10 rubles to just stick my email on my flash drive on the computer and just send it. So there must be something else we can do here, right? Because after all, 10 rubles is almost 50 cents. So I look, and sitting on the counter is this three-ring binder with these laminated sheets and laminated page protectors that have the prices on pages, you know, and there's prices for everything. I mean, internet cafe in Europe, you can send a package, you can make an international phone call, you can do all kinds of crazy passport photos, send a fax. So I wasn't getting through to this guy, surprise, surprise, because I'm trying to talk to him in English. And I decided that the thing to do would be to turn the device, this was sitting on this like turntable, like this music stand made out of molded plastic, and point to the price I wanted him to give me for the thing that wasn't what I wanted to do. And as I grabbed a hold of it and turned it, I felt a catch in my back, and my arm flinched, and I threw the entire object all the way across the room, where it shattered against the wall and then conked this poor guy in the back of the head who was sitting there composing an email. Not the best Christmas present he's ever gotten in his whole life. Just like the ski trip on the couch was not the best Christmas present I've ever gotten in my whole life. And you think, well, okay, so that's it, right? Well, except that when that happened to me, the story I thought of as that was happening was not the one about the ski trip, because I actually had had something else happen to me the year before, which is that my mother had announced that we were going to have a real Christmas tree that year. And we'd had a fake Christmas tree. I believe, in fact, that my father had kept the decorations in the garden. I just, so that when Christmas over, he's just going to pick the tree up and carry it over to the closet and then shut the door. And there's nothing in there, David. There's nothing for you in there. So my mother decides we're going to have a real Christmas tree this year. And my father said, no, we're not. And my mother said, yes, we are. And my father said, no, we're not. And my mother said, yes, we are. So now my father has to try to get a Christmas tree. Now, it's about a mile away, and there's this little place where you can go and buy a real live Christmas tree at this mall that was like a mile from our house. Now, my father drove an Oldsmobile Cutlass convertible, so he ain't going in that. You're not getting a Christmas tree. He's got to take my mom's car, which was this little Audi Fox, you know, little four-door sedan deal with a hardtop. So we get there, and he, you know, sort of dragged me. I don't know why I need to come along. He drags me along, and I'm like, oh, my God. You know, we get there. He's like, that's the Christmas tree you want, right? And I'm like, yeah, Dad. You read my mind. That one. Mm-hmm. And so he puts the Christmas tree on the roof of my mom's car, and now they're all sort of swaddled up in this twine. Now he wants to tie the Christmas tree to the roof of the car with these pieces of twine that are laying in the snow. So he says, well, I just need three or four of these pieces of twine that you have left over from, you know, from previous customers. And the guy says, no. And my father's like, what do you mean, no? And the guy says, you can't use our twine to tie these Christmas trees onto the roofs of cars, because if on your way home, if the tree comes off of your car and hurts somebody, it's my liability. It's not covered on my insurance. And my dad's like, you got to be kidding me. You want me to stand next to the garbage can and wait for you to throw the twine in the garbage and then pick it out of there? And the guy's like, sir, you cannot have any of this twine. And they get more and more heated. Christmas Eve, my father gets more and more angry. The guy gets more and more angry. They finally do that thing that adults do when they get really angry at each other. And they, fine. And my father yells, fine. And the guy yells, fine. And my father yells, fine. And he throws the Christmas tree on the roof of the car. And he throws me in the passenger seat. And he jumps into the driver's seat of the car with the door wide open. He reaches up. He rolls down the window with his left hand. He reaches up and grabs a hold of the Christmas tree as if to hold it in place on the way home. And then because my father drives a convertible. Then he reached over with his right hand and he slammed that door as hard as he possibly could. He slammed that door so hard that it latched. The door actually latched around my father's arms. They had to call the fire department to get it out. And I realized at that moment that Christmas was over for me. Not just that year, but every year. From that, this is how you go to Moscow for Christmas. Because I realized, even at age 7, that I would never again get a Christmas present that freaking awesome.
Our list is still empty, so I'll still be begging people up here to come tell your holiday story. So I see fingers pointing. No? Yes? Maybe?
Maybe.
Come on, it's totally friendly here.
It'll spring up eventually. I'm like six. I'm trying to find it.
All right, I'll beg for a couple more seconds, and I'll come back to you. Is that okay? All right. Would anyone else like to give this gentleman a little more time to work this courage? All right.
All right. Hi, I'm Hans. So I wasn't prepared to do this tonight, but we'll just wing it and see how it goes. Okay. So first, I gotta tell you that I'm Italian. Okay, so I'm not just Italian, I'm Sicilian. Okay, and I'm Sicilian, I come from Ozone Park, Queens in New York, which is a particularly Sicilian place to grow up, right? And talking about the 60s and the 70s when I was a kid in Ozone Park. You know, I never knew how different that really made me. Everybody just sort of was that way, or they weren't, you know? So I didn't really understand some of the differences and the oddities that maybe my family sort of you know, happened around my family until I moved to Florida in high school. The first thing that I realized when I moved to Florida is when I, well, met my Kim, which Bill knows, my wife now, but this was way back in high school, right, and she comes over to dinner, and it's Christmas dinner, and of course here comes the pasta, you know, so pasta is served, and we eat, you know, and Kim eats all she can, and then, well, not long afterwards, here comes the roast beef. Right? And, you know, not long after that comes the next course, and the next course. She, you know, you mean you don't eat pasta with every meal? I mean, that was sort of how, you know, made me start thinking about how different it was. Honestly, though, it was not until my grandfather died much, much later that I kind of started finding out really one of the main differences that I'm not so proud about. Okay, so one of the things was my name is Robert. My first name is Robert. Everybody called me Pons. Not many people know me by Robert, but my name was supposed to be Frank. Okay, so I don't know if you know this, but in the same tradition, the firstborn is supposed to be named after the father's name, the father's dad's name, okay, first name. Well, you got to understand, my grandfather is one of 13, sorry, one of 11. My grandmother's one of 13. Okay, we have cousins on literally every block. The whole neighborhood was us, okay? And, you know, I can't tell you how many Franks we have in the neighborhood. That was my grandfather's first name. So when my father, when I was born, this is, you know, after many, many of the other Franks, one Frank in particular was my first cousin, 2 years older than me, right, lived literally down the block, okay? My parents decided to name me Robert Frank. Well, apparently that was not good enough, okay? So I didn't know this until much later, but it was such an insult to my grandfather for the first 3 years of my life. He walked around as a proud Sicilian saying, "This is not my grandson," right? He just disowned us, right? My dad was basically, "Well, you know what, screw you, right? Screw you, old man." So for 3 years, they didn't talk. And I didn't know any of this. I was young. But as we grew up, here's my cousin Frank. We go to Grandpa's house, right? And cousin Frank's got this wonderful gift. Where'd you get that? Grandpa. I got this nice little gift, you know? So it's you know, while I grew up, where they told us, be proud of who you are, be proud of your culture. As I got to be an adult, looking back from a different lens, moving away from that, I see that maybe that wasn't such a proud thing after all. You know, sorry to be such a downer, but this is my holiday story. I wasn't prepared. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I don't even know what to call you. We appreciate your story. How's your courage? Oh, you're still thinking. You don't have a story yet. Okay, take your time. It'll come. Has anyone else thought of a story? All right.
Hello, everyone. My name is Brendan, and let me take you back when I was 8 years old, and my family decided to go to Georgia to see my uncle with my three brothers. And while we were driving there, now we're driving like a small minivan, and this is back when minivans didn't have the powered windows, they would go down like in the passenger side. So they only like came out a little bit, like push them out just a little bit. And so while we were driving up there, it's like a 6 or 7 hour drive, and my oldest brother and I were sitting in the back, and he was really sick. So he took like these antibiotic pills that gave him horrible gas. And to this day, it is the worst smell I've ever smelled before. And I don't think I've ever smelled anything this horrible. And so we're sitting back there and he's just letting them rip the whole way, like 7 hours. And my mom is sitting in the front and this car is on its last legs. And the windows won't go down in the front, so my mom is sitting in the front crying. And this is, we're on our way for New Year's, I forgot to mention that. This is New Year's going in Indiana. And she's crying, I'm gonna throw up, and she's crying, my dad's just like holding his nose like, oh my God. And so Sean decides that, oh, the best thing to do is just put the blanket over my head and lie down in the back and just keep farting. And so the smell wasn't so bad anymore. But then he decided to lift the blanket off of his head. And this is called, I don't know if you've heard this before, but it's called a Dutch oven. He threw the blanket off of his body and it was just, the whole car, it was just drenched in like this smell that, oh my, it was like rotten eggs or like, I can't even fathom, like, I can't even describe what this was. It was like rotten eggs and like mold and like milk and curdled milk. It was just healthy pizza and it was horrible. And that's it. We drive to Georgia.
I always kind of thought the Dutch oven was the reverse. Like,
I thought it was
you fart under the covers and then trap somebody else under the covers. But either way, that's horrible. I'm sorry. I guess either way, the smell is enclosed in a very small area. So. Thank you for your story. Who else is willing to share a story? It could be about farts. It could be about anything. Anyone? Please?
All right. Hi, guys. I'm Rain. So, I grew up overseas, and my family moved around a lot. And when I was 4 and my brother was 5, we moved to Egypt. We were living in Cairo, Egypt. So this is like the first year that we were really cognizant of Christmas. You know, my parents could like really like throw down the whole Santa Claus story, and they were really stoked about it. And my brother Blake and I were pretty excited that we could write up a list and like get stuff off of this list. So it was kind of complicated for my parents. I mean, now probably, you know, the world is a little flatter and you can get cool stuff in Cairo, Egypt, but then you couldn't get anything. You could get like, you know, a scorpion in an aquarium tank or something, or like a really crappy harmonica. So my parents had to, you know, they had to like write to their parents who live in the United States, which is what we called America. We called it the United States. They had to like get their parents to send all the stuff and their Christmas list. And I mean, I imagine that my mom and dad were like, this is gonna be so great, their first Christmas. And they like wrapped all this stuff. And it was like, you know, every Christmas growing up, it was really like, they'd have a couple of things under the tree. And then my brother and I would wake up. We'd try to stay awake all night, and we never could. We'd wake up in the morning at like, you know, 4 a.m. And we'd go downstairs and we'd be like, presents, because Santa came, right? So anyway, the morning comes, and there's presents under the tree. And my brother and I are waiting. Oh man, it's like 15 minutes, feels like 3 hours. So we're like, kind of like crawling around the tree, picking up the presents. The next thing I know, I'm outside, and I hear my brother tell me, and I'm on a walkie-talkie that I didn't have the night before. And then I hear my mom from kind of far away through the walkie-talkie that my brother's holding. Blake! What have you done? And I'm like cowering outside, like in the yard, like, oh my God, I'm not going back to them. I mean, I'm 4 and I know this is bad. So I peek in the window, and my mom's like crying, and my dad is, he is mad. His face is red, and my mom's crying, and my brother's not under the dining room table with his walkie-talkie and all of his other toys. We unwrapped every single present under the tree. Every single present. My parents were so upset. My mom was so upset that, I mean, this was like big time Star Wars, you know? Which I didn't like Star Wars, like Jedi, whatever. But Ewoks, like I wanted an Ewok, like a real Ewok, like a live Ewok. Like, you guys know what Ewoks are, right? So anyway, there was a stuffed Ewok under the tree that I had opened, because we had opened everything. And I was carrying it with my walkie-talkie. And when I finally came inside, because my mom was like, Ring! Ring! Get in here! And I come inside and I'm carrying the Ewok and walkie-talkie. And I walk in and my mom goes, that Ewok is mine. And I was like, no, it had my name on it. I was like, Santa gave it to me. And she was like, no, he did not. And I was like, you don't know, because, you know, Santa's real, and, like, how would she know? And she was, like, she was so mad. She was determined to get the Ewok for me. Like, I was not going to have the Ewok and open every present under the tree. So she goes upstairs, and I know now, that she writes down a fake list, and, like, number 5 is, like, stuffed Ewok. And she brings it, and she's, like, this is a copy of my Christmas list. And I was like, fine. And I gave her the Ewok. I coveted that Ewok for many, many years, but that was what she got since Blake and I opened every present under the tree.
Thanks, Ryan. I just want to say I'm really enjoying all these stories, and everyone seems like they are enjoying them also, and I really appreciate this environment, so thank you guys. And also thanks to Satchels and Lightning Salvage and Grow Radio for making this event happen. And now back to my begging. Does anyone else have a story about the ecstasy or the agony of the holidays? Dave, do you have military? Don't make me start telling horrible family anecdotes. Alright, we do have a volunteer.
Oh,
who's good?
Max.
Huh? Max will be like, you fight back.
Hi everybody, my name is Max. So, growing up, I had three brothers, one of which was a twin, so I was used to sharing stuff and, you know, not getting too many presents for Christmas. And when I was little, I was probably like, everything happened when I was little, when I was five, just because I had a bad memory, and I just say I was five. But I was probably like 7 or 8, because I could ride a bike. And, let's see, I opened my Christmas present that morning, and it was a radio, and I kind of wanted a radio, but it was red, and it was kind of crappy, and I was like, eh. And that's pretty much all I got. And I was kind of upset about it, because my brother's got some pretty cool presents. And so I was like, screw this, I'm out of here. So I hopped on my bike, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna see what my friends got for Christmas. So I went over to Mike's house, and my parents had no idea where I was. I didn't tell anyone I was going anywhere. And he got a trampoline, so we jumped around on a trampoline. Let's see, I went to like 3 different houses. and then I went to my friend Jared's house, and it was this huge bucket full of Legos, and we made Lego toys and stuff, and one of the parents like made me a sandwich. I bet they felt really bad for me, this little kid that shows up on Christmas, like, playing with other kids' presents. Anyway, so I think the last house I stopped at, there was a remote control car. Anyway, so I go back home, and this is all day pretty much I've been gone. And I get home, and my mom's like, where were you? I was like, well, you know, I got to play on a trampoline and drive a remote control car and play with Legos. It was awesome. And she's like, okay, well, we're about to have dinner. I think they kind of realized that I had a lot more fun with friends who got real presents, and I think they felt kind of bad for me. So, the moral of the story is, if a kid shows up at your house on Christmas, make him a sandwich and let him hang the trampoline. That was a really good Christmas for me. So, thank you.
Thank you, Max. And now I have someone to announce already. Bill wants to tell the story.
Yay!
One, two, I'm not sure that applies. Oh,
tell you about the holidays. Our family, my name is Bill. Our family, bless or curse, I'm not sure what it is, death seems to circle the holidays for our family. I'm pretty lucky in my life, I would say. Haven't had a lot of major confrontations with death, and like I was saying, they tend to center on the holidays. I lived internationally. I moved back to the States in 82, and in 83 I lost my dad's dad and my dad's aunt, and then I moved to Florida in 92, and then in around Thanksgiving of 93, I lost my mom's dad. And that was the real first time I had to confront death in a very personal way. I wasn't with him when he passed, but I was there sort of near that time, about a week before he passed. So I had that was my first serious farewell to someone before they passed on. Now, back up to 2009, my mom's mom is the only grandparent I still had around, and she'd been sick for some time, after 14 years, 15 years without her husband. And I've got a busy life here in Gainesville, and they were in Vero Beach in Melbourne, that area. So it was, in my lifetime, the closest I'd ever been to any grandparents or a distant family. We'd always been several hundred miles away, and so we didn't have that intimate, regular relationship with our grandparents that a lot of families are blessed with. And so we'd see them about once or twice a year. And when we were in Florida, I was especially pleased to be that much closer to my extended family just because I thought it would be a great opportunity to get to know them a little better. And that did happen. It started with my grandfather when I moved down here, and I started visiting him on a regular basis, and especially when he got sick, I spent a lot of time with him every weekend before he passed away. And then when my grandmother's health started failing, I wasn't able to visit her as regularly close to that time as I was with her husband. And so in 2009, when things were not looking real good, it wound up being right around the time of this Christmas time holiday. And I was especially busy at that time of year, so I wasn't able to be down there for any days leading up to the event. Christmas being the event, not the death. So I drove down to Melbourne on Christmas Eve of 2009. And it had really gotten to the point where we knew things were going to come to a close right around that time. And I show up, and she'd been moved to a nursing home and had been living fairly independently before that, the year or so that she was in a nursing home. She was pretty unhappy. She wasn't completely with it. She was had a lot of anger towards my mom and anybody around her. She just wasn't familiar with her surroundings and wasn't comfortable. And our family wasn't as attentive to that as probably it could have been, but again, distance played a part in that as well. Well, when I got down there in the evening of Christmas Eve, I walked into a scenario that made me pretty uncomfortable. She was in her room with hospice care, two nurses, and my mother. And the scenario was, like I said, I hadn't had a lot of experience with death, so it was pretty unfamiliar. And I wasn't sure what I was walking into, and I wasn't completely comfortable with it. And I walk in, and it made me more uncomfortable. She was breathing. She had difficulty breathing. There was a lot of difficult rasping sounds coming from the room. She was straining just to kind of get her breath. And the hospice care was just there in the room as a presence, but wasn't offering any comfort. And I think the thing that kind of disturbed me the most was that the thing they had offered her for comfort, which was the opposite to me, was an iPhone sitting on her pillow next to her head, blaring Bible verses. And nothing against Bible verses, but just the sonic quality of this horrible voice distorted through static next to her head, right next to her ear, just blaring into it. I thought, this is the last thing I would want next to me when I'm dying, and certainly the least human thing I would want next to me while I'm dying. And I walked in the room and didn't really know how to behave. It was awkward and uncomfortable, and so I just walked in and I took hold of her hand, and I held her hand, and within, you know, a few seconds, she actually relaxed. The breathing relaxed, and the room kind of relaxed, and things really changed. That moment, really, the connection was there, and the love was there that I thought should be there when somebody's parted. And I don't have a big conclusion to the story, but the point of me telling you this story is that that moment to me was one of the more special moments in my life. And it, even though it's a painful moment and a sad moment, it brings some weight and some value to this holiday season for me every time now when it comes around. And it's hard for me to say this, but that's why I'm up here telling it. So you get a moment like that yourself one day.
I really appreciate your story, and of course everyone else's. Does anyone have another story? All right, go ahead and introduce yourself. There you go.
Hello. My name is Ricky. My story is just gonna start and then stop somewhere. It's not even gonna be like, I don't know. There's some word that I'm searching for. It's not. It doesn't really feel full to me, but I felt the need to tell something. So when me and my brother were 3 years old, we got this tape recorder with a little microphone on it, and we decided, inspired by comics like Calvin and Hobbes and TV shows like the Rugrats, we would make our own radio show like a radio drama series, and we called it Baby and the Baby. And me and my brother, we were both of the babies. And basically, the premise of this show was that after we were born, and we were in the hospital, and some like dust or something sprinkled over us, and we were given the ability to speak. Everyone could hear us. And me and my brother used this opportunity to pretty much just say really obscene things as babies that babies wouldn't normally say. And at our age, it was just really a lot of just poop and pee jokes, a lot of running around the streets naked, and just weird, weird things. And every year on this tape recorder, we would release our own Christmas special. We had like our own little like radio network with different TV shows. We had our own news company, and I was one of the news anchors. And every time any of our characters would swear, we'd cut away, and we had this censor man named Bill Horseman, and he would, so we'd have this Christmas special every year where we would, we'd have a Baby and the Baby themed Christmas. One year we had to go try and find Santa Claus at the mall to try and find out what the true meaning of Christmas was, and it never really worked out because we got caught up, the two babies got caught up by the really perverted uncle, and they got held up, pretty much. And in the news segment, we would review movies, like different Christmas movies that we saw, and we were always talking to like an audience that we had, like a lot of people listening to us, when really it was just me and my brother. We would just record it and then listen to it later. And as the years went by, we eventually got our own video camera when we were 10 years old. And we started doing Christmas specials on that, and eventually we decided to make our own full-length movie that was pretty much our version of a Christmas story. A Christmas Carol, excuse me. And it was like a mafia gangster version of it. And that's pretty much where we stopped. That was like the last thing we ever made. And we were always talking out to this audience, and it was just me and my brother. We were always the ones who watched these things. And still to this day, no one has ever seen them.
Begging you to come and tell your holiday story. All right, are you coming up to tell a story, or are you like an anchor or something? All right, guys.
Yeah, I probably should have gotten a drink. Although, like, I'm a musician at the university. I get performance anxiety, and sometimes like getting up in front of people really makes me nervous. I shake, and it's all right. It's all good. We're here together, supporting each other with dysfunction and wonderful stories, which is wonderful, thank you. So, my brother's not here, which is good, because the stories is about him. And probably about 15 years ago, I was 8 years old at the time, my brother 3 years older than me, so he was 11. Christmas time, Christmas Eve, we had a wonderful dinner. My aunt came over, my Aunt Jeannie, and she brought her wonderful dog, Morgan, over this beautiful golden retriever. I love this dog. And Christmas Eve comes and goes, you know, slept that night. And of course, me being the youngest, I'm the first one to awake Christmas morning, and I get up probably about, I don't even think the sun had risen yet, and I assume my place on the couch. Across from the Christmas tree, I've got my present picked out, which one I want, and I'm sitting here and I'm ready to go. And surprisingly, my brother wasn't the first to wake up after me. It was my parents and then my aunts. And they all assumed positions around the tree. And we're like, where's Matthew? Where is he? Is he going to come? And he comes in from his bedroom. He's wearing these long pajama pants, are dragging across the floor. And he comes into the living room, and I don't know how this happened because three people had already made it into the living room safely. But my brother, he comes into the living room and skids across a pile, not even a pile really, it was a pool of Morgan, the golden retriever's doggy diarrhea. It was absolutely terrible. He skids across the floor, probably about 3 feet. It was a huge puddle. I don't know how he didn't see it, but he skids across the floor and then makes it to his knee and then slides down onto his back. Right? I hope we're all done eating. And none of us can contain our laughter. We just bust out laughing at my poor brother who, you know, just, I'm sure he hates Christmas now. And he gets up and he's just dripping from his back to his butt to his, like, pant legs that are dripping with this noxious doggy diarrhea. And like a present that you can't wait to open, or a good story. Typically, I wait till Christmas to bring this one up for my brother, but I couldn't wait till today. So there's my brother. His doggy diarrhea disorder.
Thank you. All right, thank you. Any other inspired stories about the holidays? Danny? All right.
Okay, so this is a story about actually getting grounded the day of Christmas. But before I start, I have to tell you about this duck that my dad had, because he loved this duck. And if anybody has ever had a pet duck, you know they could be pretty mean. And this duck, sometimes before school, we'd have to open up the door of the house and run to the car, because the duck would just chase us. And it was a mean duck. We named him Killer. So, anyways, my two best friends lived down the street from me, Wyatt and Todd, and they were brothers about a year apart, and they fought all the time. My parents got with their parents and decided they were going to get us all 12 speeds, because that movie Breaking Away came out, and that's what we were going to do. So we all got 12 speeds. They came over to my house Christmas Day, and it was cold out. My parents had, you know, a few acres, and they had just had it all mowed down. We were having these big piles of mulch come and delivered, dumped in there, and I guess they were starting to decompose in the middle because they were steaming when they would. And we thought that was really cool. So we were digging holes with a pitchfork and jumping in it and letting the trucks bury us. And it was pretty dangerous, but we didn't care. But anyways, so we dig this big hole, and my friend Wyatt, he was the younger one, he jumps in the hole up to his neck, and we fill him in with the pitchforks. And all of a sudden, we start hearing this, like, coming from across the yard. And I knew what that sound was. I'm like, oh, man, there's Killer's coming. So I turn around, and here comes Killer. I'm like, oh, my God. So I look over, and my friend Wyatt is buried up to his neck, and he sees the blood, and he's like, "Help me!" He's freaking out. So he's already, he can't move, he's stuck in there. So I'm like, "Let's go help him." But his brother grabs my arm, and he's like, "No, let's wait." So I'm like, "All right, you know." So sure enough, you know, and Killer comes, Wyatt's doing his best to protect his eyes and his face. He puts his face down, and he's like, "Help me!" He's bright red, he's crying, he's got snot bubbles, it's just, we're cracked. We think it's the funniest thing ever. Well, Killer does the thing you just wouldn't expect him to do. He comes over, and he wraps his wings around Wyatt's head.
Aww.
And he starts having his way with Wyatt's head. it was just like, just coming out, like an accordion, it looked like, just coming out. But it was the craziest thing, and Wyatt was just screaming and crying, you know, bloody murder, and he couldn't move. At the end, you know, we shoot Killer off, and we got to know why it's so mad at us. He couldn't stand it, you know. And he picks up a rig and he starts chasing Killer. And my dad pulls into the yard just as he's doing that. He sees us attacking his duck. And I got grounded for the rest of the day, but that's my Christmas story.
Thanks, Danny. Who wants
to
follow that
now? All right. Hey, I'm Dale. I haven't told the story yet. And the someone wants to do this. All right.
about strange Christmas gifts. So I have two stepbrothers who are 12 and 15 years older than I am. And growing up, they always got what I consider to be weird Christmas gifts, which were socks and underwear. And now as an adult male, I understand the value of socks and underwear. Because I never go out and buy socks and underwear. I wait till like the underwear is falling apart and the socks are holy and everything. So I thought that was weird, because I always got really cool toys. So part of our Christmas tradition in my family is Christmas Eve, we would have extended family over. And we had Aunt Nita and Uncle Harvey, who actually had no relation to me whatsoever, but they became Aunt Nita and Uncle Harvey just through extended family that my mom had in town. And Aunt Nita and Uncle Harvey, they didn't live too far from here in the Northeast. They lived on several acres, and they had a wonderful place. They always had us over for food. Nita actually was a huge influence on me for food culture. But one of the weird things about their house is that they had these toilet seats that were made of vinyl. It's like when they first came out in the late 70s, and they were the soft vinyl squishy toilet seats. And I always thought that was the weirdest thing. Like, I never wanted to take a shit at their house, or you know, I never wanted to sit down on it because I thought it was so weird. But one thing I didn't notice about these toilet seats is they would start to dry out and become cracked and brittle. So I told my mom about this. And so as a gag gift, she got Nita a brand new vinyl toilet seat. And I'm sure a lot of you did this as, you know, growing up, is that you try and guess what the gift is by the shape, right? So we thought this one was really obvious. It's wrapped in toilet paper, it's wrapped in Christmas paper like a toilet seat, right? It's very obvious. So we're all giggling about this because we are thinking she's gonna figure out what it is, right? So we're all opening presents, and you know, we hand this to her, like, guess what it is? And she's looking at it, she's looking at the shape, and she starts to squeeze it. And she's like, is this a toilet seat? And of course we all start laughing. And then she says, well, I hope it's not one of those squishy toilet seats, because they always stick to my rear end when I sit down, and they make this sound as you get up off of it. And we just died laughing. So yeah, I hate those toilet seats. There you go. Your Christmas gift.
Who's next to tell their holiday story? Whether it be filled with ecstasy or agony. I'm just gonna stand here.
Natalie, I'll bet William Bowers has a story about Christmas.
William?
I bet he does.
Do you in fact have a story?
How do you not?
Crisis?
All right, William.
Hey. Mic stand. Since I got recruited, how, teach me how to do it.
I don't know
how. You have to say something three times.
And then tap your
pistol. Once when I was white.
Hey, Dave O'Gorman.
Hey.
Yeah, this is about my sister. Okay, it's gonna take more than 5 minutes, but I'm worth it, so. If y'all had other stuff to do, wouldn't you be here? So! In my day job as a literature instructor, I have to try to get existentialism and absurdity across in like 5 minutes. I have to come up with a really fast way to teach the absence of meaning, or to try to help my students imagine the absence of meaning. So I go, what is something in your life that the idea that it's meaningful is dangled in front of you, and that's what makes you go through the, do we have, There have been children here every time I've been here. There aren't children. This is a weird head count. Bullshit. So, is that Kenneth Kidd? No, sorry, there's someone who looks at my old department chair here. He used to make fun of my hair, and I'm like, his hair now is so atrocious. Anyway, my point is, what is my point? Hold on. Y'all dial me back to where I was?
I'm teaching it.
Thank you. Okay. What do they dangle in front of the dogs at the dog track to make the dogs run the race?
Rabbit.
Is it a rabbit? Yeah. Is it scented?
It's
I have a hard time believing that dogs are that dumb. Y'all help me.
I think it's a great backyard.
Is it like a steak?
It's a legend rabbit.
It's a stuffed rabbit
on
the track.
So I tell my students that there are many things in their lives that are the equivalent of a dangled rabbit that help them go around the track. And lots of them are things that I find to be rituals or ceremony, like graduation. What is graduation in terms of inherent meaning? You are now from the University of Florida and you are a master's of fine arts. But what is the actual ceremony of graduation? 4 hours of names being called alphabetically. Would you go, if I told you, dude, come, hey, you, what are you doing Sunday? No. Come with me, because it's 4 hours of names being called alphabetically. And there's one of them, and it might be pre-halfway, it might be halfway, it might be in the T's. But we're going to clap when they call that. Like, obviously, so I tell my students all this stuff about, and it's very easy to use prom and marriage and, sorry, Gator fans, football championships as points to teach absurdity and existentialism. But what I mostly use is Christmas. Excuse me. The holiday season. Because I'm from Upstate South Carolina. I was raised Southern Baptist. And we are told that time to get together is about family and Jesus and giving. But I tell them that the way that we experience it, the void between the way that I experience the Christmas season and reality is what graduation meets 4 hours of names being called. Let me give you an example. My kid sister. There was a year that it was Christmas. Do y'all remember Christmas? Everybody's familiar with that concept? It was Christmas, and we were supposed to have presents for everybody, and we did the whole list, and then it came out that it was an emergency bulletin. Somebody did not have a Christmas present, and it was a step cousin of an orphan's ghost that I don't even know and I've never met. And I'm like, we don't have a present for that person. And they told me we had to go out and get a present for that person. And the only thing that was open was a Kmart. It's already sad. But a Kmart that was going out of business. Thank you. On Christmas Eve. Thank you. And it was an ice store. So my mom goes, we're missing a present. Y'all gotta go out to the Kmart that's going out of business tonight during an ice store to get that relative a present. And we went out. And we didn't know what to get this person because we don't know this person. To this day, I still don't know this person. And we went to the kids' DVD section. None of my kids' DVDs, we're all adults here. I'm looking at them. Kids' DVDs are sold in oversized packages so they can't even like fall on your butt. You know what I'm talking about? They're like huge. Oh. Anyway. They're oversized. The only things left were a sequel to Flubber that I don't think ever came out called Flubber Jr. and a prequel to The Land Before Time called Before the Land Before Time. Anyway. Sorry. I should have done more legwork on it. The point of the story is, I'm trying to have this moment. And I come up from Florida. My kid sister, I guess you have known, she comes up from California. She comes from LA. Like, she flew across the country to have this, like, quote-unquote moment with us. And I'm coming from Gainesville, America. And we're in upstate South Carolina, and we're at an ice storm and a Walmart, and it's going out of business, and there's only two DVDs left. And we're trying to decide what to buy for someone we don't know. And my sister plays the ultimate card, because she's like, God, she's just got the biggest dick. She just goes, you pick. And I go, no. My life is so stupid right now. Nothing, no choice that has been made for me leading up to the last 100 choices is one that I would have made. I would never be holding Flubber Jr. and Before the Lamb Four Times in the Kmart going out of business on Christmas Eve. Like, if not for a number of things I don't remember agreeing to, blah, 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 blood, and we all got squirted out of the same holes, etc. And she goes, you pick. And my sister has the power socioeconomically in my family because she's married to someone who edits Jersey Shore and Hell's Kitchen and a bunch of other reality shows. So in terms of money, she makes more than I do teaching existentialism and Jesus. So my answer, because our whole relationship is a fake out, is no. I refuse to choose. And then she pulls the ultimate card. She has the power to do a military pivot like this. Like, she goes, you just ruined Christmas. And she left me at that Kmart. And it hit me that, this is something I use to teach my students, that we might market Christmas as being about Jesus and family and giving, but Christmas as we actually experience it is being left at a Kmart during an ice storm, holding a copy of Flubber Jr. I don't know how I got home. I wish I could end the story, but I don't know how I got home. I know I had to drive past a textile mill that my dad got laid off from on the eve of his pension.
Wow.
All right!
Sorry you got peer pressure added to that one, but it had me in tears, so thank you. All right, well, I'm going to just talk for a minute. We'd like to thank Lightning Satchels and Lightning Satchels. Lightning Salvage Satchels and Grow Radio for making something possible. There will be a podcast that will be available online on growradio.org. And that'll be available soon. Also, their Grow Radio has a Twitter account and a Facebook page. You can keep up with events there. The Conk also has its own Facebook page. And the theme for next month is New York City!
In a row! I'm going to hand for the MC and have a year.
January. Happy holidays.